Hello and welcome to another conversation in our coronavirus podcast series. I'm Lee Hatcher. This time, Systems to See You Through, with the founder and director of the Resilience Centre, Lynn Worsley. It's really interesting. Our previous conversations in this series have sparked a whole lot of different responses to the lockdowns and the welcome slowing down in infections. We've flattened the curve, but there are some revealing changes in the way we're thinking and behaving. Lynn joins us on Zoom to chart a course of where to from here.
The last two episodes, we looked at the curve and thought perhaps that we were at maybe the second stage, and that this week I'm thinking that perhaps we would have been at the third stage if we hadn't have flattened the curve.
Yeah, things are changing.
Yeah. However, I still think there are some interesting changes in the way that we're thinking and behaving according to some of that. And I think some of the ways are very similar to what we would have done perhaps if we were still in that curve with a lot of sicknesses.
Okay.
So, you know, it's interesting watching the changes. Now we're starting to think about what it's like to be flattening the curve, but really starting to think about, well, does that mean that we've missed out on some of the worst cases? Well, yes, we've missed out on the grief and the sadness, but then at the same time we've got grief and sadness in response to the loss that we've got in our lifestyle.
And you'd probably be wise to say we've missed out on it so far.
That's correct. I said to a colleague recently, I am enjoying not being in the race, and I'm even more so as there's no race to actually be in. So I don't feel guilty to go slower, and I can sit and read and watch a movie. It's a bit like having a reset button and the permission to do so.
Yes.
There are other benefits that we can see. The waters are cleaner. The sky's without pollution.
Too right.
It feels fresher. And for those in the cities, there's no aeroplane noise. We've also got the climate change that we've been asking for. But the benefits come with a loss. For a lot of people who've been employed by large, seemingly secure companies, one of our major airlines went into administration, and that affects us all.
Yeah.
A lot of people lost their jobs. And that brings with it sadness and loss, and there's also something else that's going on within our psychologies. Some of our responses are like a grief response in this stage. So while no two people have the same grief response, there are some common characteristics that have been noted for researchers over the years for those who are going through grief. These stages of grief are amazingly similar to the curve of the COVID-19 virus outbreak. They are denial, stage one, fear and panic, stage two, deep sadness, stage three, anger, stage four, and reluctance to start again, stage five. Similar to our five stages.
Yeah, but it's interesting again with us not facing the worst of it that we expected even, say, 3 weeks ago. Would that put us in a bit of the sadness stage at this stage, do you reckon?
I think that's interesting. And the psychology that I'm observing is that people don't necessarily seem sad.
No.
They even seem to be enjoying the lockdown.
Can I confess that I am? I'm loving the space.
Well, I am as well.
I'm not trying to detract from the terrible upheavals and sadness and sickness and death that we're seeing around the world, but I'd be surprised if there are not a lot of people also kind of reveling in a bit of the space.
Yeah. But if we look at the other countries, we can see that we haven't actually had the full effect yet. It is to come. And hopefully it's not going to be in sickness, but it will come in the form of economic downturn and massive changes to the life as we know it. So that's a grief, a sadness and a loss of life how we used to be. We do hear, unfortunately, from people saying around us that we will get back to normal, or we're trying to put a date on when we return to our old life. You know, this is the certain date we're going to be back to opening our shops, and a certain date we'll be going back to our normal way of travelling. It's actually not helpful. It's the opposite of what Stockdale did. He said to his men that they were never to suggest a date or time that they would be released from prison.
Just remind us who Stockdale is again, in case people have missed our earlier conversation where we covered this very significant individual. It's quite an amazing story with very significant lessons.
Yes. So Colonel Stockdale was a prisoner of war in Hanoi Prison in Vietnam during the Vietnam War. And he had a group of men who none of them came out with post-traumatic stress or anxiety. while every single other man in the prison came out quite insane. So that it really drew the attention of many, many people, particularly researchers, to find out what it is that Stockdale did that was different with his men that helped them to stay resilient.
And what was that?
The main thing he did was that if people were saying, oh, we'll be out by Easter or we'll be out by Christmas, he would say, no, you're not allowed to say that. He would say, you have to say, we will be out, and when we will get out, this is what we will be doing. But we won't put a time to it.
Yeah, which is a crucial difference. And they emerged in good shape, got on with their lives afterward.
They emerged in good shape. They also faced the brutal facts of what they were going through. So during the time when they were in their beds or talking to each other, they were all talking about what their preferred future would be and what they will be doing when they released. At no point did they give a time when they would come out.
So how will all that resonate with us in our circumstances now, Lynn?
Well, for us, we need to make sure that we don't think about a time, that we don't put we'll be out by May or we'll be doing this by a certain time. We need to make sure we don't do that, because that just creates for us many disappointments and will take us to a place of feeling helpless. But if we put in place what we will be planning in the future and what we'll be doing when it's over, that's different. How do we prepare for the new world is another way of speaking. We have to think the same as what Stockdale did. We have to think in exactly the same way. And what he did was two things. He said, have the systems in place to help you get through the brutal facts. So we need to have systems in place to help us to get through what we're going through right now. The second thing is we need to plan for the new world, thinking about the opportunities and how we can skill up now to be ready for when that new world begins.
Bring it on. So I'm intrigued about this systems thing. You've got 10 of them stemming from that kind of work from Stockdale. Take us quickly through those and, again, how they might apply practically to our current circumstances, Lynn.
We've got quite a lot of little systems here that we can put in place, and I've got them from other psychologists as well. So let's start. Number one, stick to a routine, go to sleep, wake up at a reasonable time, write a schedule, and make sure it's varied and it includes time for work as well as self-care. Pretty simple. Put it up on your fridge, make sure it's there. Number two, dress for the social life that you want, not the social life you have.
You've been spying on me at home.
Yes. So get showered,
yes.
Shaved,
yes.
Dressed in comfortable clothes, wash your face, brush your teeth, take the time to do a bath or a facial, but put on some bright colours, and it's amazing how our dress can impress your mood.
I'm sure that
make a difference,
yep,
to it.
Really makes a difference, yeah.
Get out at least once a day for at least 30 minutes. This is number three. If you're concerned of contact, try first thing in the morning or later in the evening, and try less travelled streets and avenues. If you're at high risk or living with those people who are high risk, open the windows and blast the fan. It's amazing how much fresh air can do for your spirits.
You bet. Every time I go out walking the dog, which is a couple of times a day, I'm seeing lots of people out, social distancing, of course, but families as well.
It's lovely.
It's really
lovely.
And I thought this morning as I was doing it, I thought this might set a new kind of benchmark or a new framework for families, or certainly for kids, to get out and do that, even when social distancing is over.
Yeah, that sort of leads us into number four, which is find some time each day just to move, like even for 30 minutes. And if you don't feel comfortable about going outside, there are YouTube videos that often offer free movement classes. And if everything else fails, turn on the music and have a dance party, even if it's on your own. No one's watching.
Just as well.
Yeah. Now, number five, reach out to other people. You guessed it. At least daily for 30 minutes. Try to do that with FaceTime, Skype, phone calls, texts. Connect with other people to seek and provide some support. And don't forget to do this for your own children as well. So virtual playmates or friends via FaceTime or Messenger or Zoom. Your kids have missed their friends as well.
Yeah. There are so many options emerging for us too, certainly with technology. I'll tell you what we did as a family. We all watched together in various towns the 25th anniversary of the Phantom of the Opera. at the Royal Albert Hall in London on Netflix. And we connected with our kids and grandkids on Facebook Messenger. We started the program exactly at the right time, everyone together, and we just messaged each other through the whole thing. It was the most enjoyable night. It was a fantastic program and great connection.
That's fantastic. That's a really good one we can use. Number six, stay hydrated and eat well. It might seem obvious, but stress and eating often don't mix well. We find ourselves overindulging, forgetting to eat, avoiding food. So drink plenty of water, eat some good and nutritious foods, and challenge yourself to learn how to cook something new.
I'm reading a lot about the skyrocketing consumption of alcohol at the moment as well.
That's right. And one of the things that's really interesting is that people are drinking because it's a way of cutting the day in half. It means you start drinking at a certain time and it establishes another routine. So that's easy to replace. Do something else to establish the new routine for the day. Put some music on, go for a walk, rather than reaching out for a bottle of alcohol.
Good advice.
Okay, number seven, develop a self-care toolkit. And this looks different for everybody, but a lot of successful self-care strategies involve a sensory component. Now, we talk about seven senses in psychology: touch, taste, sight, hearing, smell, movement, and comforting pressure. Movement is when you can move around and you feel like you're in a third dimension. So that's very helpful for you to have a sense of that. And the comforting pressure is the pressure you feel when you're cuddling somebody. There's pressure on your body. And so we can use that with weighted blankets or heavy items on top of you. It's very interesting, but it's actually part of what releases oxytocin when we have a hug. We have pressure on us. Very helpful, particularly when you're on your own.
Yes.
Sensory toolkits are incredibly helpful. An idea for each might be a soft blanket or a stuffed animal, hot chocolate, photos of vacations, comforting music, lavender, eucalyptus oil, a weighted blanket, like I said. Having a small swing or a rocking chair outside or somewhere where you can rock, those are very, very comforting sensory things to do.
Great stuff. I love how practical these things are.
Having a journal or a book that's inspirational, a colouring in book, bubbles to blow, or maybe having watercolours or some sort of paint you can do. But don't forget the taste. Mint gum, Listerine strips, frozen ice blocks, ice packs, cold. That's also very good for anxiety regulation.
Chips help me.
But for children, yes, it's really helpful, yeah, to get them to create their own self-regulation box.
Good
so
idea.
You can get a shoe box, get them to decorate it and put some things in it that might help them to feel a little bit more comfort.
Love it.
Number eight, help others. Find other ways, big and small, to give back to other people. Support restaurants like Get Some Takeaway, or check in with your elderly neighbours, maybe write some little wellness tips for others or send them letters. But give a sense of your own agency when you're looking after people.
Letters have such a force today because they're so few and far between.
It's lovely. Number nine, find something you can control and control the heck out of it. It's moments like this that you can control your own little corner of the world, and it makes a very big difference to how overwhelmed you might feel. So organize your bookshelf, purge your closet, put together furniture that you've never put together yet, group up the toys. It puts an anchor around you and makes you feel like things aren't as chaotic.
Early on, I cleaned my barbecue for the first time in about 5 years, and I felt wonderful doing it. It took 2 hours. It was a nightmare, but boy, it was good when it was finished.
Yes,
yeah,
that's a great idea. And number 10, find the lessons. The whole crisis can seem sad and senseless and at times avoidable. When psychologists work with trauma, a key feature we use to help someone work through the trauma is to help them to find their own agency. That is where you are the agent of change, where you have some capacity to make a difference. And that makes a huge difference to having a meaning to the situation and constructing something out of the destruction.
Mm.
From our research during the wartime, people in prisoners of war, people who were going through massive torture, if they had a sense of meaning around what they were going through, they came through less scathed. They still were scathed, but they came through less scathed. They had a sense of purpose about what they were going through. So that's a challenge for each of us to start thinking about, well, what does this mean? What is the meaning of this in our whole world? What is the meaning for me? And what do I need to change about myself and my homes and my communities and our whole nation and perhaps our world that might mean that this is not futile?
And the bigger this crisis is, the bigger the lessons, I suspect.
Absolutely.
Lynn Worsley, everyone needs to hear this stuff. I'm so glad that you've decided to embark on this series. I should also mention your Stay Connected campaign on the Resilience Centre's Facebook page. That's been helping and inspiring and even amusing a great deal of people.
It's very fun. There's lots of our psychologists that are going online and doing little videos and talking about what it is that's helpful to stay connected. It's quite funny. Each of us are a little bit nervous about being on there, but it's great fun.
They are great, and you're all great. Lynn Worsley, thank you so much indeed for joining us again.
Thanks for having me.
You've been listening to another podcast in our coronavirus series from the Resilience Centre. I'm Lee Hatcher. Head to our website for more podcasts in this series and so many other great resources. www.theresiliencecentre.com.au